Well, that is certainly a great way to wrap up a sweep. I've often said that regardless of the opponent, sweeps are pretty hard to come by, and four-game series sweeps even harder. Game one, the Blue Jays bullpened their way to a 5-3 win. Game two on Friday, Barger and Loperfido are the stars, and some thrilling heroics late. Jays win 5-4. Game three, we got to see a near no-hitter from Bowden Francis. In game four, gosh, the Jays get 10 strikeouts from Kevin Gausman. Barger and Kirk both crush some absolute bombs. And today, like I said, they wrap up the four-game set with a sweep against the Angels. 8-2, the Blue Jays win. It's kind of funny how cyclical things are. But it's the first four-game sweep for the Blue Jays since 2022, when they last swept the Angels, albeit in Anaheim. Funnily enough, if memory serves, the first game of that series out west was Ben Shulman's first home run call on the Blue Jays radio network. George Springer going yard on one of the first pitches of the ballgame off of, I want to say, Shohei Ohtani of all players. So here we are, two-plus years later, Jays getting another four-game sweep of the Angels. Time really is a flat circle. Sho Ali is with you on Jays Talk, live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on Sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give me a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text me as well, 590-590, name and location. The People's text line is always open. Standard messaging and data rates may apply. I promise I don't talk about myself in the third person. I don't know why I said it like that. But either way, Jays Talk is on the air. Why don't we talk a little bit, before we go to the text line and certainly go to the phones, why don't we go and talk a little bit about Kevin Gausman? Because, man, he was good. Like, as much as we heaped a ton of superlatives, lavished a bunch of praise on Bowden Francis yesterday, and boy, did he deserve it, Kevin Gausman deserves maybe almost just as much. He allowed two hits. He allowed one more hit than Bowden Francis did in one fewer inning, essentially. Seven innings of work from Gausman. Two hits, one run, which was earned. No walks, 10 strikeouts, 94 pitches, 69 strikes. He gets the win, his 100th career win. Not a lot of active pitchers have 100 career wins. A lot of pitchers, like, in the course of Major League history, have gotten to the 100 career win benchmark. But I got to say, I think it's even more impressive these days, because you look at the names at the top of that list, right? You look at the career wins list for baseball, like, over the course of time, and basically every name at the top of this list is in the Hall of Fame, right? Like, if you didn't know this already, I'm sure you're not surprised to hear that Cy Young himself is atop the list for wins and innings pitched. But the man has 511 wins. Walter Johnson, 417 wins. Then you, Greg Maddux, someone who pitched in our lifetimes, 355 wins. Roger Clemens, 354 wins. But I mention these guys because baseball has changed, right? Like, how often do pitchers even earn wins anymore because of how the bullpen is used? And, you know, pitchers are throwing harder than ever. They're throwing breaking stuff more than they ever have. But they're also facing batters less than they ever have, because pitchers are going, let's say, what, like, two times through the order, maybe a third time through the order. So I think, given all of that and how pitchers and how it all changes, let's say, it has changed, even in the last, like, I know it's changed over the course of many years, but even in the, if you want to micro look at the last, like, 5-6 years, 6 to 8 years, whatever you want to call it, I think it's become even less common. So for Gausman to get to 100 career wins, I gotta say, it's very impressive. The only spot of trouble for him today was, I thought, in that top of the fourth inning. He entered the fourth with 39 pitches thrown. He left the fourth with 58 pitches thrown. Lost a little bit of efficiency after a triple and single right off the bat from the top of the Angels' order. But by and large, looked pretty damn good, right? The fastball, which we know he uses a ton of, looked good. The velo touching around 97, just over a touch over 97 miles an hour today. His command of the fastball especially was phenomenal. He was placing that thing mostly wherever he wanted, so I was very impressed with the fastball command today, much like we talked about with Bowden Francis yesterday. But for the splitter, Gausman's splitter, I just feel like it's one of those pitches. I said this when Gausman first signed with the Blue Jays a couple years ago, but Gausman's splitter, when that thing is on, when it's moving, I really do think, in terms of individual pitches, in terms of individual pitches, any pitcher in Blue Jays history has thrown, right? In terms of unhittable pitches that, like, Steve threw and Halliday threw and, you know, gosh, like Marco Estrada had some pretty nasty pitches, right? Like, in terms of pitches that felt like when they were on were completely unhittable, Gausman's splitter, when it's on, has got to be up there. It's like a top five individual pitch when it's working for any pitcher, and any starting pitcher, I should say. And today, I think it might have been the most impressive it's looked all season. Like, I just feel like we have not spoken about that splitter in a positive way for much of the 2024 season. But the velo on that splitter was up by about 1.5 miles an hour. The vertical break on the splitter, which is obviously very important to a pitch like that, was way up as well. And even in terms of the year-long average, in terms of the, you know, inches and how much the splitter runs and breaks vertically, on average, he was still throwing it better than he had the entire season. So I have said the splitter has not split very well for a good chunk of the year. I think the stats do bear out today that that was the best the splitter has been the entire season. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. 590-590, name and location. I see a whole bunch of texts here. We're going to get to as many of them as possible, get to as many of your phone calls as possible as well. Let's go to the phones to start us off. Let's go to Eddie in Fort Erie. Eddie, what's up?
Hey, Show, how are you this afternoon?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I enjoyed all four games that I saw. You know, they were great games, and good to see the young kids do their thing. And it was a great pitching performance last 2 days by Bowden Francis and Kevin Gausman, so it was pretty good. Now, I wanted to address a little something in relation to Bowden Francis, because I saw yesterday, or actually today, Taylor Ward's comments about the pitching performance of Francis. And I thought to myself, you know what? This never ceases to amaze me, Show, because that, like, obviously that player, Ward, has been playing on a team filled with excuses. They messed up Ohtani's career, and they messed up Trout's career. And another thing, too, they've ruined other players as well, whether they've been with them or currently with them. And you know what? You never see the Blue Jays make excuses on pitchers that they face. They never made one when they faced Garrett Crochet, and they certainly didn't make one on Bailey Falter, because I called you about that back in May during that the finale of the Pirates series, and I told him that he was pitching very good, and they couldn't square up any of his pitches, and you never see the Blue Jays make those kinds of excuses. So, and the fact that Bassett had the sign there was really good, and we know lately Bassett has become some sort of, or maybe close to being, a very polarizing figure on the Blue Jays with the comments he made on the podcast and after the games from time to time about his outing. But the one thing that he cares about is his teammates. He was there for Varsho when he didn't get a gold glove, and he certainly was there for Francis to defend him on the comments that Ward made during the interview that Francis had with Sportsnet when he had that little piece of paper. So that was my whole takeaway from that series and about the Angels in general.
Hey, Eddie, I appreciate the call. Thank you. I think for those who did not see what the Taylor Ward comments were from yesterday, I'll just read it to you. It's actually kind of funny. The person who tweeted it out that kind of got aggregated a little bit by a variety of media was our very own Jules, right? Julia Kreutz from MLB.com, putting this into the Twitter sphere. And Jules was not, it wasn't a gotcha moment. She went in, was doing work for MLB.com in the Angels clubhouse, and she does that, especially when Keegan is doing stuff for the J side of the beat. But she went into the Angels clubhouse and she got this. And this is the, I'm going to read you what she tweeted out, okay? Taylor Ward on what made Francis so tough. And this is, quote, "I really don't know. You know, I thought that everything was hittable. Maybe to other guys, he made better pitches. A lot of guys were talking about his split and that being on. But personally, I didn't think it was anything special," end quote. That's the quote from Taylor Ward. It does, I kind of agree. Like, it does kind of, sort of smack of some sour grapes, but I don't know. Like, doesn't that also buy, like, if it's kind of like a double-edged sword, right? Like, doesn't that kind of cut both ways in the sense that if you're saying it's nothing special, and hey, if you're the only one to get a hit off of a pitcher in an entire game in the span of like 2 hours, and you're the only player who gets certainly not just a hit but a home run off of one pitcher over the course of an entire ball game, I think you're probably, even if you lose, you're probably entitled to say whatever you want because you did get him. I guess he'd gone yesterday 1-for-3 because I think he got hit by a pitch as well. But I mean, I don't know. It doesn't really bother me. I think mainly because I still somewhat feel bad for Taylor Ward. Because if you guys remember, it wasn't last season. I think it was the season before. And I don't know off the top of my head how many games the Angels have played here at the Rogers Center like since this happened, but I can't imagine it's been that many, right? Even with the balanced schedule, I can't imagine it happens like a lot, right? So a handful of times. But Taylor Ward got hit in the face by a fastball from, if I'm remembering correctly, Alek Manoah. And I only mention it because I kind of wonder if he just kind of just bears a grudge towards the Blue Jays. Because that year, if you remember, it was Trout and Ohtani having their ridiculous seasons. And after that, like the next best hitter, especially early in the year, was probably Taylor Ward. So I don't know. It does smack of sour grapes a little bit. I'm not really sure what grousing like that gets you. And then as Eddie mentioned, the interview on TV, I only saw a brief snippet of it on the TVs here in the radio booth, but I did see the little picture on social media of Bassett holding up the piece of paper and, like, you know, hittable or, you know, with his numbers over the last couple of games against the Angels. Pretty hilarious stuff from Bassett. I mean, that's like a world-class, all-time, top-tier troll job by him. But I got to say, I don't put too much credence into it just because, like, who cares? But also, why are you giving him bulletin board material? Seems unnecessary, right? Especially if your season is not going anywhere. I think to Eddie's point, I mean, like, do you really need to, in a lost season for either of these teams, you really need to be putting up bulletin board material? I'm going to go out on a limb and say no. Probably don't need to do it. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Russ in New Jersey. Russ, what's up?
Good afternoon. How are you?
What's up, man? How are you?
We might have a winning, the first month, we might have a winning record. I think they're 4 games with this sweep. They're 4 games over 500, so that's pretty good. I want to argue with you and disagree with you on something you said last week. Okay, let's talk about, you know, people call up about trades, and then you said at the end, and I say this respectfully, okay, you know, because I think you're a great baseball guy and you follow the game very well. You talked about, you know, oh, we can evaluate, you know, sometimes you evaluate years later. Let's take the Barrios trade. The Jays lost the Barrios trade, and I'll explain you very simply why. You were in a position in 2021 where the Toronto Blue Jays felt they were on the cusp of going far in the playoffs, and they had two pieces of, I'll call them gold, and Richardson and Martin. Their piece of gold, their top prospects, I'm not telling you what every team would have given you for them because I don't know the answer to that, but it could be fool's gold because it could be nothing at the end. But you had two players who you can convert. Now, the Toronto Blue Jays felt at the time they were a team that was on the cusp of going far into the playoffs, and that's why they gave up these two guys. The Minnesota Twins look at it, on the other hand, and I don't, you know, they looked at it, well, we're going to give up this guy. We're not winning today, but we know we have a good pitcher in Barrios. We'll get two young guys in. I look at the Blue Jays. I don't care what happens to the Minnesota Twin guys. If I win two World Series with Barrios and those guys come on to be stars, so be it. I accomplished what I wanted to accomplish. The Blue Jays set out to accomplish, to go far in the playoffs, and they didn't get that done. Now you have Barrios because you signed him. They had 2 years left on his contract. So you didn't get what you set out to accomplish in that trade, you didn't do. So from the Blue Jays, they lost. Now, if those guys turn into great players, then you lost more. But what could you have done with those two players? You could have kept them. You wouldn't have been worse than you are now. Richardson is pitching in the Minnesota rotation. Martin's playing. But the point is, on the flip side, the Minnesota Twins have to look at it from their perspective. And their perspective is, we waited, and we knew we weren't going to win back in 2021. Well, they happened to go farther than the Blue Jays because they won a series last year. Happens to be against the Blue Jays. But the point is, that's what they've made out to accomplish. They've done that. Sometimes you could have both teams win a trade. Sometimes you could have both teams lose a trade. But if I'm looking at the Blue Jays, even if Barrios threw 0-0-0 ERA, we lost a trade. We didn't. What you thought you had a team that was on the verge of going far in the playoffs. And the fact is, they didn't get there. So that trade, and it's already over because 22, his contract was officially over. They signed him. So for me, you lose that trade. It's only based on what I made out, what the Blue Jays made, you know, wanted to accomplish. And they didn't get to that point. So I don't care what those other guys become. If I win the trade, then I win. If I win a World Series, then I won the trade. So that's really the way I look at a trade. You know, not what those guys could have become, but what could I have done with those two pieces if I hadn't traded for Barrios? And there's a lot of different things you probably could have done, but Barrios being on this team has been a solid player, but we haven't gotten to where we need to get. So that's the way, that's why I look at the trade that way.
Sure. Hey, Russ, I appreciate the call. I always appreciate having these debates with you. I do appreciate when you call in, certainly. I think it does depend on, certainly when it comes to trade evaluations, depends on just what you want. Like, you, certainly the Blue Jays count as you, quote-unquote, right, using the royal you or the royal we or the royal us here, right? But I think it does kind of depend on what you want out of a trade. Like, is it simply larger results? Is it that you can only judge a trade based on the amount of either regular season or postseason, obviously in the Blue Jays' case, success? Then if that's the case, then yeah, I would have to agree that unequivocally most trades they have done in that time period would be viewed as failures, because ultimately if you're making trades with the goal of winning a World Series, or at the very least making a deep playoff run, neither of which have happened for the Blue Jays during this era, as we have documented endlessly, then you kind of have to view it as a failure. But I think the reason I'll still view it as a success is because let's say, and I hear what you're saying, Russ, because you're saying, you know, you kind of have to stop the evaluation of the trade after Barrios would have become a free agent, right? Because I said that before about other players too, so I can kind of get behind that evaluation of things. But, you know, because the Blue Jays ended up signing Barrios to a very team-friendly contract, and they had the first opportunity to do that beyond anyone else, because they had his, you know, had his rights, for lack of a better term, and had him available to only them, and he clearly wanted to stay here in Toronto. So if that's the case, then I view it as a success, because let's say that didn't get done. Right. Let's say you did just didn't make that trade, and you still had Simeon Woods Richardson, you had Austin Martin. Woods Richardson would probably be in the starting rotation, but would he have given you the kind of output that Barrios gave you last year? Probably not, I would say. It's only really this year that he's kind of, I don't want to say like turned into a pumpkin by by any means, but he has not been as good this year as he was for most of last year. Right. So I think that's why. If I'm just replacing Barrios with Simeon Woods Richardson, and even if you discount Austin Martin, because I'm not really sure what he's going to be at the major league level, I'm not really sure it's going to be anything beyond, you know, is he going to be an everyday player at any point, or a consistent player at any point? I'm not sure. It's kind of a bummer for a guy who was a relatively high draft pick. But for Woods Richardson, I mean, if you're literally just doing a one-for-one swap in 2023, I mean, do the Blue Jays make the playoffs? I don't know. Honestly, I tend to think no, right? And I mean, that's an even worse result than what happened last year. I mean, don't get me wrong, it was so sad and demoralizing. Well, you don't have to relitigate that. Please, let's not. But I don't know. That, I think that's why I still view that as a win. Because, and I mean, look, I think there's also a lot of room left. And this is why I think it's hard to evaluate trades long term until you've seen the breadth of a lot of their careers. But what if Barrios ends up continuing to pitch poorly? What if what if next year it's even worse than this year, and then next year Simeon's Wood Richardson and Austin Martin actually continue to play, in the pitcher's case, plays well, and Austin Martin becomes someone really, really consistent for the Minnesota Twins, then maybe I would change my mind, right? But I think that's why it's such a hard thing in baseball in particular to really change things. But I agree with you, it might be the only sport in which we do that, right? Like, if you trade, the only example that comes to mind, if the Leafs traded Mitch Marner and he goes on and has like a redonkulous season somewhere else, but the Blue Jays or the Leafs win the Stanley Cup, I know, unlikely, but if that were to happen, then like you'd probably view it as a win. You'd probably view that trade as a win. Both those things are probably pretty unlikely, trading Marner and the Leafs winning the Cup, but I don't know. I think that's why it's tough to evaluate trades in baseball. 590-590, name and location. You can certainly text me here on the People's Text Line. You know what? I see a text here from, just as a quick correction, Kevin in Toronto just said it was last season that Ward broke his face on a Manoah pitch. God, was it really last season? My goodness, it all blends together. And then, yeah, Bowden Francis did hit Taylor Ward in yesterday's game in the helmet. So I think I really genuinely believe at least a part of the motivation for Taylor Ward to have the sour grapes comment was because he just doesn't like the Blue Jays. He probably was just so grumpy. He probably was just mad. And if that's the case, then I don't know. I tend to not take it very seriously. And honestly, Bassett's response was the perfect response. Like, they could have gone out in the media and been like, yeah, Taylor Ward sucks. Like, we hate Taylor Ward. But they didn't, right? It was kind of like a lighthearted way to do it while Bowden was talking to Dan. So I think that's pretty cool. 590-590, name and location. Let's see here. Chris in Regina. Hey, show, how often do you see a four-game sweep? For all the Jays complaining, it could be worse. You could be an Angels fan. That's true. I mean, you're not wrong. Also, we haven't changed the manager or bench coach or hitting coaches. Aside from the competition, why are they hitting home runs? I got to think, like, there's got to be something, too. And there's no empirical evidence behind this by any means, but there's got to be something to playing a little freer when the stakes are a little bit lower or when there are basically zero stakes. Let's put it that way. And again, maybe that applies to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Maybe. I only use him as an example because he has been absolutely red hot. Like, Vladdy can do no wrong, as evidenced by just, like, sawing off the little blooper for an RBI late in the game. I think he was in the eighth inning. So, you know, I mean, he can do no wrong. But he's done it so consistently, I think I go even beyond whatever the stakes might be. He's just hit all over the place, right? I mean, even in a relatively pressure-packed situation, he was one who gave the Blue Jays the lead back today to make it 2-1 on the double, right? So, which was, by the way, a ridiculous hit. He kind of got the changeup on the edge of his bat and still almost hit it for a home run, well over the head of Kevin Pillar. The ball bounces all the way back into the field of play. Run scores easily. Great stuff from Vladdy. So I think because we've seen him hit in pretty, like, you know, relatively clutch, you know, quote-unquote situations here, I'm going to absolve him from that. But I think for a lot of the young guys, I don't know, it probably behooves them to see them thrive in a relatively low-stakes environment. Like, I actually had this conversation about, funnily enough, who was it? Scotty Barnes. Scotty Barnes I had this conversation about with the Raptors and how, you know, the man was an all-star and he was rookie of the year. And I don't know, like, the teams did not have for the Raptors, like, a huge amount of expectations on them. But I think being able to learn and make mistakes in an environment where you're not, like, punished for it because if you fail, it means they are one game further away from making the playoffs. Like, I really do believe that it helps you. Now, of course, how does it matter when ultimately they do play in pressure-packed situations? And hey, I mean, they still have performed in the spots where it's mattered the most. So it also, if we're being honest, it could also just be the law of averages. Things could just be balancing out because the offense was so terrible for so much of the early season that we were saying, boy, it's not. And I said this a million times, it's not just like 50 games of this. It's actually 100 or it's 212 games of this or whatever it is, right? So, you know, I think we're past that at the very least, but I do wonder, in the back of my mind, I do wonder a little bit about what it will look like next season for a lot of these guys, and of course, that's what the whole season is about. Let's see, let's check some more texts here. On the text line, Jeff in Peterborough says, great game, would like to see Vladimir Guerrero Jr. get a multi-year deal. I see here Ed and Aurelia. Does MLB not have someone watching games to evaluate umpires? This guy behind the plate is one of the worst I've seen. I would go so far as to say he is poop emoji. So there you go. So I'm guessing, Ed, you do not want to say that emoji. You wanted to say another word, which, you know, I appreciate because I can't say it on the air. But, you know, I'll just say this. We don't have to go too long on this, but I am looking forward to the automated balls and strikes system, or at the very least, like, the review system. At the very least, the review system. I think that's, I'm not sure you really want robot umps if they haven't been 100% tested, and because, you know, that kind of probably leads to some problems. But I tend to generally lead more often than not towards the robots here. Let's see, another text on the text line, 590-590, name and location. Matt in Halifax said, wow, another brilliant start for the pitching staff. Vintage Gausman out there racking up the K's. Great to see the offense coming through as well. Let's keep this going into Fenway. Andrew from Kitchener, this team is the most fun to watch in the last 3 years. Is there a chance the Jays can make a run at the third wild card? Okay, so I don't want to sound like a huge Debbie Downer on a day the Blue Jays complete a four-game series sweep. I'm going to say no. And here's why. Okay, here are the teams in front of the Blue Jays. I don't think these have actually been updated with today's scores, but here are the standings as of, I mean, I don't think they would have changed that much anyways, even if any of these teams won or lost. But based on the wild card standings entering play today, because I had this screen up on my computer before the game started. So the Royals were in the second wild card position But they're virtually tied with the Twins at 2 and 3 wild card spots because they're both 72-57 entering play today. The Red Sox were 4.5 games back of the third wild card spot. They are 67-61. The Rays are 65-64. They are 7 games back of the third wild card. The Mariners are 7.5 games back. They are 65-65. The Detroit Tigers are 64-66. They are 8.5 games back. And again, prior to today's game, the Blue Jays were 10.5 games back. So I mentioned all the teams in front of you, because if you think about it like this, right, I think after today's game, there are 31 more games in the regular season, right up until September 29th, which is the final day of the regular season, I believe, here at the Rogers Center against the Miami Marlins. So that's the amount of games remaining. So in 31 games, okay, what you need to happen is not only do the Blue Jays need to play really well, you essentially need a whole whack of those teams, if not all of them, to completely melt down between now and the end of September. And I'm not saying it's impossible for teams to melt down. We literally saw it. You guys remember last year? I mean, I know the Rangers won the World Series, so the point is moot in the end, because they don't care what happened during the regular season. They won the World Series for the first time in franchise history. But there was a chance. There was a time where the Rangers were, like, so far and away the division leaders. And then by the end of the season, on the last day of the regular season, they were battling it out because the Astros and Rangers, they were swapping positions almost daily because of this massive meltdown the Rangers had. It is absolutely possible that, let's say, one team melts down. And I would make the argument the team that's had the meltdown is the Mariners, frankly. They're in the midst of a massive meltdown. They just fired Scott Service. Like, Scott Service found out about being fired through social media and not from Jerry DePoto. Like, what a mess, right? The Mariners are the team that's having the meltdown right now. But, I mean, it's probably even still pretty improbable, but possible, that another team has a meltdown. Like the Tigers did, or the Rays did, or even the Red Sox. You go and take 4 or 5 from the Red Sox in Boston. Yeah, I suppose it's possible. But it's just, in order to make the playoffs, you essentially need one of the Royals and Twins. You need the Red Sox, Rays, Mariners, and Tigers all to melt down. And I think that's why it's just so. And then you yourself have to also play at a really high clip of winning percentage. That's what you need. You need all of those things to happen in the span of a month, effectively. And I don't know. How likely is that? I'm not because the Blue Jays are bad, but just because, I don't know, how likely is that from any team? Right? I think that's really the only reason why. And I think that's why when you look at Baseball Reference or FanGraphs or whatever, that's why the percentages for playoff odds are so darn low. Because it's out of your hands, essentially. Like, if the Blue Jays can win every single game until the end of the regular season, because we're talking about, like, right now the conversation is, can the Blue Jays even get back to 500? And then once they get back to 500, can they finish the year at 500? So we're talking about the Jays getting to, like, a plateau of, like, let's say 82 wins, even. They finish the year by 500. 82, 83 wins, right? That'd probably be viewed as, like, a quote-unquote win, given where the Blue Jays were for a good chunk of the season. Like, I don't think they haven't been at 500 since, like, May or something, right? So if that's the case, I would view that as a win. But ultimately, if you're talking about what'll get you into the wild card this year, like, if the Royals and Twins have 72 wins before the end of August, you got to think, even if they play passable baseball for the rest of the season, then, you know, they're going to be, what, like 89 wins, 87 to 89 wins, 88 to 90 wins, probably even more, frankly, the way they've been playing. So if that's the case, then I don't know. That's a tall order. You know, it's kind of like the Dumb and Dumber thing. Like, you're telling me there's a chance? I guess there's always a chance. It's just it's an unlikely one. 590, 590, name and location. Let's go back to the text line real quick. Just Joey, no location on this one, says, I wish we had this type of play from Kevin Gausman all year long. Nathan and Ripley, Joey Lo Perfido is a mouthful. I like to nominate him for the nickname J-Lo. That's funny. I wonder if there is any other J-Los anyone who could, in theory, take that in baseball. I'm trying to think. I have to look that up. I do know that his nickname from the Players Weekend was Joe Cooks. I don't know if you guys saw this. I don't know how much they did of this on TV, but, you know, when the Players Weekend was pretty recently, and, you know, they used the fun bats and, you know, they had the nicknames and stuff. I know they didn't wear the nicknames on the jersey this year, but Joe Cooks was Joey Lo Perfido's nickname because he apparently likes to cook. He's a bit of a chef, so maybe that's the nickname that will stick. Although if the secondary nickname of J-Lo does go, I don't mind it, Nathan. Maybe we'll try and make it happen. Kind of like Y-Rod, maybe we can go with J-Lo. Mark from Thorold. Hey, show, great to see Barger hitting like this. When you add Horwitz with Alan Roden and Kesevich knocking on the door down in Buffalo, offensive future for the Jays looks pretty promising with or without Bo. It's too bad Orelvis is not in the house to see what he could do at this time also. It's true. And I can't imagine we're going to see Orelvis for the rest of the season. I know his suspension technically ends before the end of the regular season, but I think because the minor league season actually ends a week before the regular season and his suspension is going to, I think the difference between his suspension and the rest of the major league season was only about a week. There's not going to be any time to send him on a rehab assignment. So, like, would you want to bring him up without a rehab assignment after not playing for like 3 months, essentially? Probably not. So, unfortunately, we probably have seen the last of Aurelius Martinez for this season. I'm sure we'll talk about him more next season. But on Barger, I mean, Barger hits a 2-run bomb off of Hunter Strickland in the bottom of the sixth inning. He absolutely obliterates a hanging slider. And he's been playing great recently. I don't want to slag the guy by any means. I just wonder, with the logjam of guys, what his role is. Like, with Clement playing so well, Barger is just probably not going to see a ton of time at third, right? So how much do you want to play him in right field with Springer still out there and a whole bunch of other guys needing time that could rotate in and out at DH? So, I mean, you're probably not going to be DHing Barger a lot, but, I mean, we've seen Springer get DH'd certainly more than we've seen him got DH'd last year. So if you're going to be DHing Springer, then I guess you could put Barger in right field, but then that means, like, you have some decisions to make with Vladdy and Horwitz and all these different guys in the infield. You can make it work, certainly. But, I do wonder how that plays out. It's probably worth running Barger out there as much as possible until the end of next month. But let's say, and this certainly seems to be the case, Bo Bichette returns in the next few weeks, and apparently he's going to join the team in Boston. He's going to get in some base running over the course of, I don't know if it's going to happen tomorrow, but maybe on Tuesday, and then maybe by next weekend, by this time next week, maybe Bo is on a rehab assignment in Buffalo, and then maybe by the following series, which would be not the beginning of next week, but just shortly after that, maybe you see Bo back in game. So if that's the case, it's another spot, shortstop, that you now effectively can't put other guys like Clement and Jimenez if you're committing to playing Bo every single day like he usually does when he's healthy, right? So, I mean, hey, play Barger as much as you possibly can, certainly before guys start to return, because I do wonder, he's 24 years old, he's going to be 25 by the beginning of next season, what his role will be. 590-590, name and location, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are all the myriad of ways to reach me. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Tyler in London. Tyler, what's up?
Hi, Howard. Thanks for taking my call.
I think
the Blue Jays can reach 500, but I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. But that's just my opinion. What I wanted to talk about was that walk to Guerrero in the eighth inning.
Sure. Yeah. What do you want to say?
The announcers were saying they weren't too happy with that. Well, I listened to a lot of Yankee games, and my question is, why are people still pitching to Aaron Judge? He hit two more homers today. He's got 51 now, but they're pitching to him. Why are the managers not walking Aaron Judge? Like, I don't understand. Is it because maybe you think the managers are told they have to pitch to him? I don't know what the story is, but they're pitching to him every game. He's not walking.
Hey, Tyler, I appreciate the call, man. I do think, because I forget who brought this up. One of the late night Jays talks we were doing might have been Alan in a cab now just in Toronto, I guess, but and retired, I suppose, now. But Alan had asked the same question, right? Like, why does anyone pitch the Judge anymore? And I think that the simple answer is just that, I mean, Aaron Judge is as nigh untouchable a player as there is in baseball now. I think I saw the stat that Judge hit his 50th and I guess now 51st home run. I think the Yankees went back to back to back with Soto, Judge, and Stanton, which is just absurd, right? But you look at Judge and as great as he was, and now he's in the company of like people who have hit multiple three or more seasons of 50 home runs or more, and it's like Babe Ruth and Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire and A-Rod. So it's like, it's basically three guys who were accused of using steroids and Babe Ruth, essentially. So that's pretty ridiculous company to be in if you're Aaron Judge. But I also think he does strike out a lot. Like, he strikes out a lot because Tyler's right. He doesn't also walk a lot. And that is by no means a knock on Aaron Judge. The man is the runaway favorite for AL MVP. I got to think that because, at the end of the day, baseball is a sport of failure. Even the most successful guys are still hitting at a rate of like 30%, essentially, right? So if that's the case, then I kind of understand it. Like, I think you play the averages. Having said that, I mean, it still seems like a losing proposition to throw baseballs to Aaron Judge. And frankly, I mean, these days it feels like a losing proposition to throw baseballs to Vladimir Guerrero Jr., right? I mean, I was, like the fans here in attendance, a little put out when Vladdy got the intentional walk, because, I don't know, you want to see Vladdy hit, right? And I joked yesterday that these days we could probably spend, I don't know, like 5 to 10 minutes on Vladdy every single game and still find something pretty positive to discuss. But like Tyler says, the intentional walk today, because of the threat he poses with runners on base, you just don't take that chance. But the next time up, he slaps a double into left field. He got intentionally walked again, and with right before the Kirk home run too. But on the double into left field, we mentioned this earlier, but the great changeup off the bat, he just has incredible pitch recognition. So I mean, it's, again, why even bother pitching to Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? By the way, after that RBI double, this was from Sportsnet Stats and the Blue Jays, Vladdy leads the majors with 29 extra base hits since the All-Star break, which is kind of stupid, right? It's kind of ridiculous how good that is. So anyways, breaking news, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is a good baseball player. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, let's go back to the phones, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell, 590-590, name and location, that's the people's text line, still a whole whack of text for us to get to. And on the other side, speaking of Vladdy, actually, I did want to get, we did this last Sunday with Julia, and I'm by myself today, but I did want to get to this a little bit with you guys. This was from Bob Nightingale. There's a report on how the Blue Jays want to use Vladimir Guerrero Jr. on the diamond. Is he going to play a lot of first base? Is he going to play more third base going forward? And what would the fallout from that be? Let's talk about that report next on the other side. You're listening to Jays Talk. Show Ali with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
I'm sure the Netflix thing is loving it over there, right? They just got to be chomping the bit at that. But yeah, it'll be weird, you know? I'm not really looking forward to seeing Jano in a different jersey, to be honest. It's still pretty weird. You know, he was the first guy that reached out to me when I signed here. You know, a catcher, a staple back there for really a long time. And so I think he got drafted when he was 17. And so he's been a part of this organization for a long time. So it'll be weird to see him wearing a different color. But, you know, I wish him the best, but obviously not against us.
That is Kevin Gausman discussing the potential weirdness that awaits us tomorrow for the doubleheader. The Blue Jays are going to see the Boston Red Sox. So the first of 5 games tomorrow. But, of course, Kevin Gausman certainly won't be pitching in the doubleheader tomorrow, but Danny Jansen is certainly going to be playing in the doubleheader. And as you guys know, some Major League history awaits us tomorrow, as Alex Cora has already confirmed that Danny Jansen is going to catch in the resumption of the suspended game that will resume in, the top of the second inning. And I believe it was Danny Jansen at bat when the game was suspended. So not only will he catch for both teams effectively in the same game, but will catch, I guess, in the at-bat that he was previously batting in. So that's a pretty little fun little quirk of how baseball works with the suspended games. But that's Kevin Gausman, who, again, today was just phenomenal. 7 innings, 2 hits, 1 earned run, no walks, 10 strikeouts as the Blue Jays sweep away the Angels with an 8-2 win here at the Rogers Center. I'm Show Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Still some time to give me a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell, 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. It's always open. I want to talk a little bit about Kirk and talk a little bit about the Bob Nightingale report about Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s usage at third base going forward. But first, I did want to get to a couple more texts. Let's see. There was a text here, Jeff in St. Thomas, of Vladdy for Prime Minister. That's it. That's all. That's the text. It's pretty funny. Tom and Ajax. Actually, it's funny because these next two texts are kind of like diametrically opposed. Tom and Ajax says, hey, Show, no chance the Jays are getting the third wild card because the next 5 series are all against good teams fighting for a playoff spot. And then Bobby says, the Royals schedule is crazy, which I admittedly have not looked at. I have not looked at what the Royals are doing. But the Royals schedule is crazy, says Bobby. If we win 7 or 8 against Boston, we've got a shot. So, yeah, he's basically saying you got to win a lot and you do have a chance. And again, you have a chance. It's just there's so much that's outside of your own control that has to go right for that to be the case. And I feel like let's get back to 500. Let's see a team get a 500 record. Then we can return. I promise I'll return and have this conversation, because I think that's the spot in which you can start to take it a little more seriously. And, hey, I mean, the Jays are not that far out from being 500 after they won 4 straight against the Angels. So you definitely can have that conversation next weekend. You know, maybe we'll see how the series against the Twins, which is next weekend, and certainly against the Red Sox go before you're facing the Phillies and the Mets and the Braves, which come up after that. So it's a bit of a tough road to hoe, but you know, we can revisit that. There was one from Greg in Brantford. Can you explain the waiver claim process as to why Boston got James Paxton? Did Jays have an opportunity and didn't want him? Now, if I remember correctly, James Paxton was, I think he was DFA'd. Because the way it worked is, I think the way the DFAs work is you have 7 days of the transaction of the DFA before the player can be traded or then placed outright on waivers. So I think he was on waivers, and then the Dodgers just traded him to the Red Sox. So I do think had he gone on waivers, teams that had a higher priority than the Red Sox, I would imagine the Blue Jays would have had such a priority, and maybe it's based on actually last year's. I gotta double check the way the waivers work. But in Paxton's case specifically, he was traded to the Red Sox. I don't think he was claimed off waivers, but waivers in the way DFAing works and so on, it's a little funny because you like hear the DFA news and then like boom, you kind of like there's nothing, and then he gets traded essentially, right? Much like Kevin Biggio, what happened with Biggio earlier in the year. All right, I want to talk a little about Kirk before we go. We got about 10 minutes left, and Kirk. It's funny because we were talking about the intentional walks. Kirk gets to the plate after Vladdy is intentionally walked with no one on base. Like, I can kind of understand when you have a base open walking a guy, but with no one on base, I don't know, just like pitch to the guy. I really do believe that. But Kirk smokes one, 395 feet. That has got to feel, first of all, so good when the guy in front of you gets intentionally walked because they feel you're an easier out, and then you just punish the next baseball thrown to you. Great stuff from Kirk. This echoes a text we had gotten yesterday, and I think it was from Logan in Georgetown. But since Kirk has assumed the primary catching spot on the team, I actually feel like he's played much better. His numbers are starting to actually turn towards being, you know, like an average offensive catcher. He is nowhere near the form he had in, I guess it was the first half of 2022, when he was the starting catcher for the American League in the All-Star game. But so we're not there, obviously. Just to be clear, I'm not saying that. But, you know, given that he is just average offensively, knowing that, as we do, that Kirk is pretty well close to being elite when it comes to his defensive game, his pinch framing, he blocks pretty well, he calls a great game, he works well with pretty much all of the pitchers, starters or relievers, that's great, and we know this already to be true. So if you're an average offensive catcher and a pretty great to elite defensive catcher, most teams would take that, I would think, right? I mean, again, is Kirk going to be batting like cleanup all the time? Probably not, and I think you actually prefer that he's not, especially if you can go out and get some guys who can bang in the offseason. Yeah, for sure, you want that. But I think there's enough there from Kirk that I think it's you don't consider it like a black hole as much as you did for much of the early part of the season. I just really do think the run he's on, we're talking about Jano a little earlier, the run he's on is at least enough for me that if it continues through the end of the regular season, and there's a lot of ifs when it comes to between now and the end of September, it does kind of push the need for a backup catcher, I would say, to like the very bottom of the shopping list, no? Like the needs list, right? You can't ignore it. But I mean, if they end up just re-signing Jano in the offseason and you return with Kirk and Jano as your catching tandem next year, that's probably fine. Honestly, it's probably fine. So there are also not a lot of options out there, as we've discussed at length. But I mean, hey, that's fine with me. Your dollars are probably better used elsewhere. Let's put it that way. I mentioned the report from Bob Nightingale. So I'm going to read you what Nightingale said in USA Today. Bob Nightingale is actually going to go on with Roger Lajoie, I believe, tomorrow. So I'm sure he'll talk about this personally a little bit more. But I'm going to read you verbatim what he wrote in USA Today in his weekly column, which comes out every Sunday. The Blue Jays are exploring the possibility of having Vladimir Guerrero Jr. play third base next season and are planning to use him there more frequently in September. Guerrero hasn't been an everyday third baseman in 4 years, but considering there is a deep crop of free agent first basemen this winter, led by Pete Alonso and Christian Walker, it will be much easier to fill a hole at first than at third. End quote from Bob Nightingale. And I generally agree with the last part of that premise, which is that it's generally easier to find a replacement-level player at first base than it is at third base. Not for Vladdy's replacement statistic, but just to find a good first baseman is, I'm sure, much easier than it is to find a good third baseman. And I'm curious what you guys think of seeing more of Vladdy at third base. Well, I'm not convinced he is the long-term answer at such a position as third base. It does mirror the comparison many of you guys have made to Rafael Devers for months. You've been talking about Devers, and Passan eventually caught on. He talked about Devers pretty recently as well when he was on with Blair and Barker, or Ennis and Barker. But Devers probably, I bring up his case because certainly the Blue Jays are going to see the Red Sox and Devers tomorrow, but Devers is probably also not a long-term answer at third base for the Red Sox, right? He likely will eventually shift to first by the end of that deal. He just signed it, 10 years, $313.5 million in January 2023, so last January. So he'll be 38 at the end of that deal. He's 27 now. He'll be 28 in October. I just looked it up. So he is someone who is, what, already, I think at best, like a decent defender, like an all right defender at third base. I just can't view him as a long-term third baseman. It's just that the Red Sox, kind of like to this point, have had good options at first base, namely Tristan Casas, who just returned, you know, again, just being the operative word here, off of the IL, the 60-day IL, after missing much of the season. And again, I just think all of that applies to Vladdy. Like, if you want to make him a third baseman and sign, let's say, Christian Walker, to use one of Nightingale's examples, to play first base, it's not going to be for a long time, right? Like, Walker will be 34 before next season starts. So how long are you realistically signing a guy like that for? Like, 2 years? 3 years, and the third year is a team option or a mutual option, let's call it? I mean, if you're signing Pete Alonso, it's a little different because he's going to be 30 in December. You're going to have to give him a whole ton of money. And so for comparison's sake, and I know you guys know this, but for those who don't, the Jays handed the biggest contract in the history of the franchise to George Springer, and that was 6 years, $150 million. And Alonso reportedly wants more than that. He wants a long-term deal of at least $200 million, has been the report all season long. And look, we know all the top free agents, or the top free agents not named Shohei Ohtani, essentially, from last year, did not get top dollar, right? Matt Chapman, certainly. Cody Bellinger, Teoscar Hernandez, J.D. Martinez, Jorge Soler. Like, all the guys did not have the greatest offseason. Jordan Montgomery, although he's a pitcher, but you know, all these guys, a lot of them Boris clients, certainly, as we discussed, got less than most expected. So maybe Alonso will not find as robust a market as he wants, but he's still going to command lots of money for a decent chunk of time. And maybe if he signs with the Jays, it won't be for a huge long term. But I just can't help but think, if that's the direction the Blue Jays are going in, then I got to think part of the equation with Vladdy is that he will actually end up being a first baseman long term. But in the short term, they'll just try for some kind of short-term solution with whoever it is at first base. Maybe Reese Hoskins. Maybe Paul Goldschmidt. Maybe Josh Bell. Those guys are all free agents this year, and I don't know if any of them are particularly sexy. I actually wouldn't mind a Reese Hoskins at first base if Vladdy's going to play third. And of course, if you're getting just I'm not a huge fan of Vladdy playing third long-term, but I just wonder if you can get anything passable from him at third base, you're probably fine, right? You're probably fine. Ish. And I think the other half of this equation that really fascinates me is the cascading effect on the rest of the lineup. Like Clement, for example, who we talked about a lot recently, he's been playing really well. Assuredly, he is on the team next year. So if Vladdy's going to be seeing any sort of time at third base, I got to imagine that the Jays will be out on the Bregmans of the world in free agency, and that whenever Vladdy is DHing or at first base, Clement will just play at third base. Right? So you're entering next year essentially with some sort of split of Vladdy and Clement at third. Horwitz could play first if, say, like, again, we're spitballing here, but if Walker or Alonso is on the team and they're DHing, or more likely Horwitz will be your starting second baseman next year, or he'll be the 75% of the time starter at second base. Like, there are a lot of options you could do. What happens with Bo Bichette? Clement could play at short if he needed it to. It's just going to be a really interesting offseason when it comes to developments for Vladdy. His contract, certainly, what Horwitz and Clement are doing next year, what Bo's status is, either as a Blue Jay or not. I mean, there's a lot of options for the Jays. But I just found that report from Bob Nightingale so fascinating, because we kind of talked a lot in the past about how much should Vladdy be playing at third base. And if he's going to play more than he is right now, which is to say like once or twice a week at third base, then that does change the effect on everyone else, and probably also changes how much money he's asking for, right? Because third basemen are a little more valuable. As we just laid out with Devers, they're a little more valuable than first baseman. A couple more texts to get to before we go. Mark in Thorold. Oh, Mark had texted us yesterday about like the hitting coaches and so on. I did want to pass along that Don Mattingly, I think he had like shoulder surgery. And I think that's why we had not seen him in quite some time. So that's why Don Mattingly has not been on the broadcast, I think. But I do believe he is going to rejoin the team very shortly. Tango in Ottawa. Tango, this is mean, man. This is tempting fate. Tango says it would be weird if there was another rain delay. It would be weird. It would also be horrible. None of us want that. Tom doesn't want that. I don't want that. Andrew doesn't want it. Nick doesn't want it. Raj doesn't want it. No one wants another rain delay. They're playing five games against the Boston Red Sox. No one wants like a, yeah, and they're not going to do a triple header, although that would be kind of fun. But no one wants to see another delay. Please, Tango, let's keep the bad vibes away from this five-game series. Appreciate you being with me on Blue Jays Baseball, everyone. Brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Guelph and Elmira, Ontario. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com. Canada's number one rust protection. For Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Andrew Adams, Nick Blackmore, I am Sho Ali. That does it for us. We are out of here. The doubleheader tomorrow is going to be handled by Blair and Parker. They will be on TV and radio in between games, radio only after game two. They have you covered for the rest of the week as well. I am back on the weekend as always, and I will be in for Blake for a few days on Jays Talk Plus as well. He's taking a well-deserved break before the home stretch, so like it or not, you will hear me again soon. Hey, have a great Sunday, everyone. Appreciate all the calls and texts. You guys are the best. I'll talk to you later.